Footy's best punting plays for the weekend's games. Mick McGowan and Adam White join Gareth Hall for RSN Central's Footy Fill-Up.
Time for the Footy Fill-Up on this Thursday morning here. Let's welcome in the team. Hello to you, Mickey McGowan.
G'day, Gareth.
And hello to you, Adam White.
G'day, guys. How are we?
Happy birthday, Whitey.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I forgot about that.
No, you didn't.
No, I did actually. There's a hell of a lot going on in your house at the moment. It's primary school athletics day. Everyone's doing it from their house. So we've got kids running all around the house trying to collect house points, and it's fair to say it's chaotic.
Okay. Well, I wish you the very best. I wish you the very best of luck there, Whitey. Hey, Mickey.
I'm Shane Kerrison today. Gareth, Shane Kerrison.
Okay. I don't even know
Mickey
who Shane
know
Kerrison
is.
Shane Kerrison, is he from the castle? I don't know.
No. Premiership player at Collingwood, Gareth.
I apologise. I should know that. I should know that, Mickey. Now, Mickey,
Darryl
tell
Kerrigan.
Me. Yes, I thought it was Darryl Kerrigan. Hey, Mickey, we'll move on after a beautiful start with the Footy Fill-Up today. Is it a little bit weird that you've got a week off in between preliminary and grand finals?
Oh, for me it is. Gareth, I just think we've lost a little bit of momentum. We're all rubbing our hands together thinking what a great game we're about to witness. But we still have to wait another, 9 days from today. So it is, be patient. It'll come. Bide your time. But in between, we can have the Brownlow medal to talk about, which we will. But I just think the anticipation is getting to a lot of us.
So, Mickey, this weekend, as a coach of the Doggies and also Melbourne Football Club, how do you go about it? Do you have match practice? Do you make sure that you have some physical element to your training to prepare the players, not only physically but mentally? That's what Lee Matthews was saying during the week. Do you follow that approach?
100%. I just think probably after the weekend's games, even though they played on different days, I think the first 3 or 4 days would have all been about recovery. Check in with your physiotherapist, any little niggles, let's get on top of them early, set the program up for the next sort of probably 8 to 10 days after that. And by probably tomorrow or even Saturday morning, I think you'd probably get into some serious match simulation using the squad that's available to participate in that type of match practice. And you want it probably to emulate as much high-intensity, finals-type footy as you possibly can to keep them programmed. And from all accounts, that's what Melbourne did a couple of weeks ago on their bye weekend, and it probably held them in good stead because there was talk out of the camp that as much as the players that weren't playing, they were physically assaulting the contest, really made it hard for the incumbents who were in the senior team and really forced them into really hurried decisions, made sure they got into good spots to receive the footy. So it was done at a high intensity, which will replicate a final, particularly a grand final. That's something you've got to do.
Brownlow this Sunday night, Adam, you enjoy it. How have you dissected this year's Brownlow medal? Do you think that we can make some money? Because the markets are out for the Brownlow, and there's so many different betting options that you can invest in and work out a staking plan that not necessarily has you backing the winner, but you could be backing a certain player to be the most successful in their team.
Yeah, exactly right. Look, I think the difficulty with the Brownlow medal this year, and I can't remember a year like it where the top three chances are all $4 or less. So that's Ollie Wines at $3.25, this at the tab, Clayton Oliver $3.50, and Marcus Bontempelli $4. Then you've got to go out to Jack Steele $7, and then you're out to $14, Christian Petrarca. So I don't think you're getting value in those top three in the market. So that makes it hard to be confident about any other player. But a little bit later on, I've got a couple that I think we should be specking at odds. And then when you look at most club votes as well, I think there's some value there in a few. So yeah, I think it's one of those ones, Gareth. I remember a couple of years ago when I was really keen on Nat Fyfe around that sort of $10 mark. I don't think we've got necessarily one of those betting propositions this year. It's going to be a question mark as to whether it goes to the player that's just got a heap of the footy and played really consistently over the course of the year, or whether it might go to someone that has big impacts on games. So, you know, you got Wines and Oliver as the big ball winners, And then you've got Bontempelli and Petrarca as the two that get a lot of the footy, but have big impacts on games, in close finishes, multiple goals in games, that sort of thing. So I think that's what you've got to weigh up when you're doing your Brownlow medal betting this year.
Okay, so we'll have a look at the Brownlow now. We've got Ollie Wines at 325, Clayton Oliver at 350, Marcus Bontempelli at 4, Jack Steele, who finishes strongly at $7, Petrarca at 14, Walsh at 20-1, Darcy Parrish at 26, Tom Mitchell at $41, Jackson McRae at 41, Zach Merritt at 51, Luke Parker at 67, Jared Lyons at 67, Maxi Gawn at $81, and then Travis Boak, Joshua Kelly, Cam Guthrie, Rory Laird, Hugh McCluggage around the 100-1 mark. Mickey, do you see that the favourites will dominate here, or do you think that there might be a player that salutes his share at a 20-30-1 quote?
I'd be surprised, to be perfectly honest, even though I think a lot of those guys in that 26 and beyond bracket, I'm talking Parrish, probably McRae and Zach Merritt, and even Luke Parker's had a terrific year. They're all big odds and represent value. But I just think you keep coming back to what Whitey said, the high volume winners, they're under the noses of the umpires. They know how to win it in really difficult situations, Oliver, Wines, Bontempelli, but then when they extract the ball and put it into space, they generally stand out with their execution and their decision-making. But also with Bontempelli, the reason why I liked him probably after round 10 or 11 when we had this discussion, fellas, back then, Bontempelli was 650, and to my eye at that stage of the year represented value, and I think next month of footy saw him plummet into about $3.50. He's around the $4 mark at the moment. The 650 was valued. A bit like Whitey now, probably because his last 2 or 3 weeks wasn't great, and I don't think he'd probably get many votes in that situation. But I reckon by around 18 or 19, I think he'll be in front. And that's when you've probably got to ask yourself, will he hold off an Oliver or an Ollie Wines? Because they finished the season really strongly. But from a value standpoint, you can see why Parrish and Zach Merritt and McRae, I reckon, be in the conversation, because they just get the footy so often. And generally speaking, Parrish with his hands, Merritt with his feet, and McRae with both, they certainly stand out.
There's so many different betting options, as we just pointed out a few times already, Whitey, but you've got different groups of players that you can bet on. For instance, there's a Group A betting group with the tab, and that's Timmy Taranto, Jordan DeGoey, Dom Sheed, Ben Cunnington, Jacob Hopper, Tim Kelly from the West Coast Eagles, Ben Keyes from Adelaide, and Joel Salwood. So you can work out how you can make some money regarding who wins that certain group. How do you think you'll approach your betting this time around for a Monday night? Because we all know that you're on Ollie Wines, but from a new betting point of view, from a new betting proposition, how are you approaching Sunday?
It's like going to Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory with the amount of betting options there are. It's very exciting. Look, I see it this way, a little bit similar to Mickey. For me, I think he is probably going to be out of Ollie Wines and Marcus Bontempelli. They're the two, I think. But I think going into a betting market with those odds on Sunday night, I don't think either of those represent any value. The problem with Bontempelli is his last month, so I don't think he'll get a vote. He might get one vote against Essendon, but outside of that, I don't think he's going to poll in the last month. So that's a bit of an issue. See, I actually could build a case for Jack Steele. But again, at $7, I just reckon that's a fraction short. If I was getting $12, $14, I'd have a few dollars on Steele, because he's clearly such an influential player in that team where a lot of his teammates just won't get votes. So it's almost like almost becomes a default position. If St Kilda win, or how did Jack Steele go? So the best way of doing this for me is you look at it this way, and I've gone through this sort of philosophy before. Ollie Wines, 14 times this year he's had 30 disposals or more in a game, 11 of those in a win. So that's a big number. Clayton Oliver, exactly the same, 14 games where he's had 30 possessions or more, 11 times in a win. The only one that kind of gets close to that statistically is obviously Jackson McRae, who's had 20 times he's had 30 possessions or more, 15 times in a win. That has to count for something, and he's $41 as opposed to, say, a Clayton Oliver, who's at $3.50. So that's why I just think someone like Oliver at that price is too short. It's Zach Merritt. Mickey mentioned him before. 15 times 30 disposals or more, 8 times in a win, and he's $51. And the other one I wanted to mention was Darcy Parrish, who picked up all those trophies throughout the course of the year. That's because in seven games, he had 30 disposals or more in a win. So that's to give you a little bit of a reference point. I might try and whack that up on Twitter or something like that, Gareth, for people to use as a bit of a reference. But purely and simply for value, I'm going to have some dollars on Christian Petrarca to win the Brownlow medal at $14. Nine times he had 30 disposals or more in a game. Five of those were in winning matches, but a number of other matches he had 25 plus and was part of that being part of a win. But he also kicked 27 goals for the season, seven times multiple goals in a match. So I think that mix, I just think from a value point of view, that puts him up there for me with Marcus Bontempelli, who's $4. The others that I could build a case for say top five, top 10, definitely Tom Mitchell. His second half of the year was particularly good, 15 times 30 disposals or more. He's at $41, but say he's $3.50 for top five. We mentioned a little bit about Merritt and also Parrish. And then Mickey also mentioned Luke Parker. I mean, Luke Parker's always polled really well in the Brownlow medal. Eight times this year, 30 disposals or more, 15 goals, but he's a high-impact player. He's not someone that necessarily gets a lot of the footy, but a lot of times over the years, Parker's had, you know, 22 possessions and a couple of goals, and he's got three votes. I'm not sure who's taking votes of him this year in Sydney. So I think, again, $7 for top five, or $67 if you want to have a couple of dollars on that, I'd be looking that way. And just historically, guys, it's absolutely become a midfielder's medal. And so it's about how many votes will sort of players max out on, how many do you need? Dangerfield had 35 votes in 2016. Martin had 36 in 2017. Mitchell, 28 in 2018. Fife, 33 disposals in 2019. And last year, when there was just 17 games, Lachie Neale got 31. So you'd think that out of Wines, Oliver, Bontempelli, Steele and Petrarca, those top five in the market, the winner's got to get 30. And I reckon they will. I reckon the winning tally is going to be somewhere between 30 and 35 votes. So whoever you're going to put money on, you're going to be confident they can at least get to 30.
How are you playing Sunday night, Mickey?
I've already had that Bontempelli bet at $6.50, and I'm pretty happy and comfortable with that. I'm filthy on myself that I didn't invest in Clayton Oliver as well. I thought he was really good odds probably at mid-season. I just love his ability. I'd love to be in the mindset of the umpires, Whitey and Gareth. Do they post game get the stats driven down their throat, and then they
get the stats? They make a point. They don't get the stats.
Yeah, I don't know about that. when you see some of the games that you watch over the last few years, you sort of shake your head and say, "How come he didn't?" When he had such an influence on the game with less numbers. And that's what I'd love to know, because there's been times where, and you know, Whitey enunciated it perfectly and brilliantly, saying that there's a lot of players that have great impact in games of footy from a coach's perspective, and they are game changers with lesser possessions. You know, I go back to, say, Cyril Rioli, for the influence he had in some Hawthorn games, and sometimes you'd walk from that arena saying, well, gee, the most influential player on that ground was Cyril Rioli. You look up his numbers and he's had 16 touches, but he's had four or five assists, got out of trouble, kicked a brilliant couple of goals himself. Come Brownlow night, he doesn't even get recognised because Mitchell's had 42 and Hodges had 37 down back, and Jordan Lewis much the same. And they get, or Buddy Franklin kicks six, or Ruffy kicks five, and Rioli sort of doesn't get the due recognition he deserves. So it'll be really interesting to see what does take place. But I think from a punting perspective, there's a lot of angles you can take, and sometimes to make the night sort of attractive, I think if you can go to each club and look at types of players that you can multi-up in, leading, being in front of their own club's leaders board, I reckon that's one of always interest. And when you look at, say, Essendon, for example, even with the ineligible players included on the tab, if you think Darcy Parrish at $1.65 value, you could put him in a multi as opposed to Zach Merritt at $2.15. Jake Stringer's had great influence in games of footy. We know that this year. Probably his second half was much better than his first half, and he's $21. So if you think there's any value in those three, you could put them in a multi against other blokes that are probably shoo-ins, like a Travis Boak without Ollie on Wines in the market, Luke Parker, I reckon there's no danger to him being the top vote getter at Sydney. Yeah. All of a sudden, you represent great value.
Welcome back to RSN Central on this Thursday. It's a footy fill-up with Adam White and Mickey McGuan. We just had a quick chat about the Brownlow on Sunday night. I'll take your questions in just a moment as well. There's a host of questions coming in regarding this Sunday night's Brownlow medal. But, Mickey, let's just have a chat about what happened there last weekend. First of all, Geelong, they were a little bit crooked, they say, but they just didn't turn up against the Melbourne Football Club, and they were awesome in that victory. I guess, are you confident that they can replicate that performance once again?
Oh, absolutely I am, Gareth. As we said last week going in, I just think I haven't seen a team that's covering the ground as hard and as long for a long period of time. I think they're clearly the fittest team in the competition, and then it comes down to how they execute. Their performance against the Cats was probably their most rounded performance of the year. They were so efficient going inside 50. Goals per inside 50, 34.5% was a season high. And to do that at the pointy end of the season, it tells me the mechanics of their game is in really good shape. But when you drill it back, it all comes back to contested ball and their contested possession differential against a team that's renowned for competing really strongly was plus 30 by game's end, which was the third highest for Melbourne's year. So it just goes to show, as I say all the time about football, there's three categories I look for at this time of year. Is how teams are competing. So contest one are really important, whether it be ground level or in the air. The ball use, can it handle the opposition's pressure that they're trying to impose? I thought that stood up magnificently. And then for themselves to apply pressure, which is a choice you have to make, to deny time and space on the opposition, was certainly at the forefront. And that's the reason why they were so good in both components of the game. The offense and defensive balance within their game was evident for everyone to see. They were absolutely brilliant. And the other aspect that really stood out to me was their ability to get after the loose footy. And it's no coincidence this year, in this year's finals campaign, the side that wins post-clearance contested possession differential, they win the finals game of footy they're involved in. All eight winning teams have won the post-clearance contested possession count in this final series. And when you've got blokes like Petrarca, Oliver, Viney, I thought was his best game for the year and probably his best game for a period of time. They just got after that loose footy and they showed up probably what I've classified as walkers out of stoppage at times, and that's what Geelong have got with Dangerfield and Selwood, the ageing bodies they are. They're great when the ball's in the 0 to 2 to 5 metre area, but once it gets outside that bubble and spills into some space, the old leagues are starting to catch up with them.
So what do you do if you're at the Geelong Football Club now, Mickey? Do you make some tough decisions and what would you do?
Well, they're in a bit of a pickle, Gareth, because they've committed to so many of these good players in Duncan and Dangerfield. Selwood's got a year to run. Guthrie's just got an extension. Gary Rowan was timely signed before the final season campaign started. So they've put themselves in a bit of a quandary because they've got some players who I think are capable of being AFL players in that team, but they just haven't been played. Jordan Clark, for example, will he move back to Perth? Does he want out even though he's a contracted? Is he going to request a trade? Watch his space there. That'll be really intriguing to see what unfolds there. Is Constable just a very good AFL footballer? Dominates that level, but when he comes up against midfielders at AFL level against the best, he really struggles. So does he survive the Geelong sort of probably handover or changing of the guard? Or does he look for another home to try to push his mark and his name into the AFL ranks of being a good, consistent AFL player? And then you talk about Narkle as well, who hasn't played a lot of footy. He hasn't played a lot of footy in the last couple of years. I think he's played 21 games. Just can't get into this team consistently. And let's face it, he's uncontracted. He hasn't committed to a new deal at the Cats. And there'd be other clubs be asking whether or not he can find another home to probably give him the chance to be a consistent contributor elsewhere. So they've got some real strong decisions to make. I'd be shocked if they gave another contract to Higgins. Sean Higgins is good a player and a great player he's been over a history of time. I just felt there was times where he would have been played, but he wasn't played. And when he came onto the game the other night, albeit when the game was done and dusted, he really showed some wares. But do they really go with him in the view that they didn't play him when games mattered? And Lockie Henderson, I felt his final series was where he probably didn't have to be at this stage of his contract discussions. Does they make a decision on his future in the view that they got a Nathan Kruger who probably hasn't played a lot of footy. They find out about him, or does he himself look for another opportunity elsewhere to see whether he can get games of footy at AFL in the AFL landscape? But I think they've got some hard calls. You become a victim of your success. Hawthorn proved that over the history of time. I think you go back to the early part of the 2000th century and Brisbane Lions were exactly the same. And I understand that philosophy because you trust so many players to get the job done. And when they get the job done, they do it again. They prove they can do it again. You hang on from a period of time, maybe 1 year too long. But I reckon Clarko got the model right, trying to wean out one or two players each year and try to see the writing on the wall before it becomes a huge issue. And that's where Geelong probably feel they're at the moment.
Whitey, we've chatted about that other prelim between the Doggies and Port Adelaide. I was watching that replay once again last night, and Port Adelaide were just too bad to be true. It's like, I wonder if Kenny Hinckley has sat down and watched it a few more times, because it was just like a complete and utter nightmare for that footy club. They just didn't turn up, where the Doggies, on the other hand, were there ready to play. They have the week off now, the Doggies. Do you think that's an advantage, more of an advantage for them? Or do you think it doesn't really matter in the context?
Oh, I think it is something that the Dogs need, in the sense that they've already played an extra game in the final series than Melbourne. They had that sort of grueling match against Essendon in wet conditions the first week. They've been doing more travel. You know, Melbourne have fundamentally been on a holiday in Perth for about 3 weeks where they had to play one game. So I think having that extra week will definitely not advantage the Bulldogs over Melbourne, but give them a better chance at being competitive against the Demons because of the preparation the Demons have had. So, look, I don't think, guys, that if Melbourne was so good on the Friday night, and Mickey's spoken about that, it truly was a complete performance. But I reckon they would have been barracking for Port Adelaide on the Saturday night. I don't think they'd want to play the Bulldogs out of those two. In fact, I think the Bulldogs are the one team they would have tried to avoid through the entire final series. Because I go back to that game at the MCG late in the year where the Dogs won and won quite comfortably. I just don't like the matchup for Melbourne. I'm not saying Melbourne can't win, but I reckon the Dogs are going to go in as good value in the grand final, just purely and simply on the back of how they played the Dogs that particular night.
We're having a chat.
How Dogs played Melbourne that night.
We're having a chat about this on Wednesday with Mickey Barlow and Dylan Buckley regarding the best bottom six for both clubs, and also the most important players, or the important player for both clubs heading into that clash on Saturday week. I think everyone nearly voted Steph Martin for the Western Bulldogs, and maybe the Demons have the slight edge in the best bottom six. What about your thoughts on all of that?
Is that directed at me?
Yeah, yep.
I'd probably say Melbourne, just. Not much between them. And depends who you put in that bottom six, I suppose, and everyone will have a different opinion if you rank them in pecking order. But I just feel that Melbourne, right across the board, and the way I see the game, and we'll probably talk about it at length next week more in depth, but I just think it's the offensive power that I think the Western Bulldogs have got versus the defensive strength of Melbourne. And that's probably could be the difference between the two. Can the Bulldogs, who are generally a high-volume team, share the footy and get the game on their terms with territory, lock it in and get repeats and score from that, and really challenge the defensive setup, defensive structure of the Melbourne? But also, do we see Melbourne, who win contests, get forward play territory really strongly? Can their forwards, one, stand up, but can they be as efficient team as what they were last week against a disappointing Geelong team? But to answer your question, Gareth, I think if you really drill down, I think just slightly, the Melbourne team might have the greater depth at their disposal.
Now, we've got a host of SMSs that I'd love to get through, so we might start them in just a moment. But just to get us up and about and excited and ready to go for Saturday week, I wanted to play you this clip. We have to go back nearly two decades ago when Mickey McGuan was revving up his boys at the Burnie Football Club as they headed out in their grand final in the Tassie State League.
How's each and every one of his halt anyway? Now let's just reflect as to the reason why we got the grand final stage. Way back in November the 1st in fact, this group developed a mission statement. We developed a mission statement. Its aim was to be successful, respected, committed, hardworking,
and unselfish towards our team goals. Now, each of those five components have been adhered to, and that is the reason as to why we've got to this stage of the year. But let me tell you this, and I must reiterate the fact, home and away games and second semi-final victories are totally different to a grand final berth. Grand finals are not just another game. The reason why they're not just another game is because there's too much pressure imposed on the contest because the stakes are so high. Grand finals give every team member an opportunity to lift in every aspect of his game, even against the increased opposition pressure, and that'll be there today. Grand finals keeps alive in all of us a spirit of vitality, a spirit of boldness, and a spirit of enterprise. The other thing about grand finals, they teach us to be proud and unbending in defeat, yet humble and joyous in victory. Grand finals also teach the brave to face themselves when they're afraid. They teach the strong to know when they're weak. They also really focus on the individual, knowing that at no stage can you attempt to master anyone else but yourself. And above and beyond everything else, grand finals gives each and every one of us an opportunity to predominate courage over that weak, feeble characteristic of being timid. Now, fellas, a grand final victory must be pursued. It must be wooed with all your might. All the noise, all the fanfare, all the display, the colour and excitement, I promise you, they'll only exist in the memory. But it is the spirit, the aggressive nature of the competitor, the will to excel, the will to win, they endure. Those qualities last forever. And these are the qualities I think are far greater and more important than any events that occasion them. Like I said on Thursday night, it is far better to dare mighty achievements, to win glorious triumphs, even though at some stage today you'll be checkered by failure, than to rank with those poor, timid souls that neither know victory nor defeat, nor enjoy or suffer much. Because they live in the greater twilight area, never ever once have they been prepared to put themselves on the line. Now fellas, I promise you this, tonight at some stage your life will be different, one way or another. But I also will promise you, today we can control that emotion. Fellas, providing we are willing to pay the price, victory will be ours. I promise you. Now let's go out there, 21 unified, friendly Dockers people, together and always.
Geez, that gives me goosebumps, Mickey. I miss that. I miss going to the football, listening to your footy coach rev up your boys before a big match. I want to ask you this question, and that is some art, to do what you just did there to inspire a group of players and know that what you were going to say without stumbling word for word and deliver it perfectly like you just did. How difficult is that, Mickey?
Well, the build-up, I don't know where you got that from, Gareth. You plucked that from somewhere or something.
Yeah. I've had a few people send it to me over the last couple of days, Mickey.
Okay. It brings back great memories because a lot of people don't understand until you're in the situation of what we were. We were going into a grand final against Gary McIntosh, the legendary Gary McIntosh from South Australia, who was coaching Launceston, North Launceston. And they were a very good footy team. And going into the grand final in the second semi, we lost Andrew Herring, who was our 110-goal goal kicker. It'd be like Sydney Swans playing in the grand final, losing Buddy Franklin. So we knew that we had all the pressure applied to us. We had lost our leading goal kicker, who was such a symbolic person within the footy team, but also a very, very good footballer. He was on Carlton's list when he first came over from Tasmania. Didn't make it, went back home, played at Burnie. And he was such a fantastic person, but more importantly, a really good player within our team structure. So going in, a lot of talk was because of who they haven't got. It's easy to focus on the negativity. And I just felt, well, we've got to deal with the 21 blokes that are gracing the park. And grand finals, to me, they challenge every partier in every facet of the game, whether it be in offence or defence, but also in terms of your physical assault on the footy. When your time's to go, you've got to go. So I thought long and hard about what message am I trying to portray here. And I thought with living the experience, how great Lee was, Lee Matthews was, at trying to get us up for the right time of the year. Sometimes you just have to address what's important. And we felt that we didn't have to mention what we'd achieved to get to that grand final, and that was an undefeated year. But more importantly, to focus on the next 2 hours against a very good team, we had to make sure we were physically and mentally ready.
Now, that's sensational stuff, Mickey. We might put that on our social media platform so people can see you at your very best. A few SMSs coming through. Mick, as a coach, you know what your team slash club is lacking and what it needs to do to change and get better. What do the Cats need? You, speed, a new game plan? And would you consider trading a star player like Dangerfield to get draft picks for a rebuild? That's from Peter.
Yeah, I think they've got to really now sit back and say, well, what we've achieved throughout the home and away season is quite admirable. I had a lot of faith in what they could possibly do in this campaign, but certainly whether their illness was a huge issue as to why the discrepancy was so great with the scoreline, I don't think it wouldn't have mattered, even if they did have healthy players, because I thought they were clearly outplayed by the Melbourne Demons last week. So I'd be probably sitting down and really challenging Scotty and saying, well, OK, as much as our slow tempo, protect turnover, build from the back type philosophy with possession, kicking game, kick mark game is quite good and sound, can it revert to a strength of ours if it goes into a chaos game in finals when the ball's alive, uncontested marks get taken away from you, the uncontested possession gets challenged, particularly at ground level? What's our hunt like? Should we be able to revert to more a chaos game? And if we do, how's it going to survive? Because I think sometimes they miss opportunities with that slow build-up. They could go at speed but are reluctant to, because literally I think some players, and I experienced this when I've been coached but also now coaching, that if you say something to a player or a group of players, they can literally take the message and go too far with it. And I think at times the Cats probably overdid it with slow ball build-up. And I think that would frustrate the hell out of Tom Hawkins, Jeremy Cameron, Brad Aguilea, Gary Rowan at times. But I think they've got the arsenal to change the philosophy. The players that I think are real natural footballers, they tend to love fast ball because their creative minds get to work and they can have an advantage over a disadvantaged group they play against who might be slower of mind to read the game. And this is where the good players come to the fore, I believe, and I just don't think they marry up what they've got at their disposal often enough, because they're quelling the influence those players can bring on the contest because their creative minds are being stifled on the back of slow ball movement.
The Ballarat Trots, is that meeting still on tonight and also Saturday night? Yes, the Ballarat Trots will be commencing despite the lockdown there in Ballarat. Happy birthday to you, Whitey, RSN's greatest. Treat yourself to a vegetarian lasagna and herbal tea today. That's from Tommy from Ashburton, Whitey.
Please.
Yes,
please.
That won't be happening. Hawley, can you ask me his thoughts on the Essendon District awarding premierships? There are a lot of unhappy people at club level. That's from Steve.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting landscape, and I think we've got to have a sit-down chat with our club, talk about it. I don't want to demean, I've got my thoughts on it, but until we accept what the club wants to do, because I don't want to demean our reserves who are undefeated, our thirds that are undefeated, our women's team, the one that was given the premiership as well. So until our club decides whether or not we accept it, or we do what basically the Echuca Footy Club did in the Goulburn Valley and give it back, that's to be worked out. So I'd probably refrain from comment until we know what the club's intentions are.
All right, then. Has Whitey had a vanilla slice yet for his birthday?
Guaranteed I have. Yes. Morning tea, so that's taken place, and there'll be another one for afternoon tea.
Does it help Petrarca that he just gets on with it, no back chat? Umpire's only human. That is analysing the Brownlow medal too. As close as you can get by analysing which player's back chat or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I will say one thing about Clayton Oliver. In his last 4 years, he has got 12 votes, 13 votes, 12 votes and 14 votes. Statistically, this year is his best, but only marginally better than some of his other years. So I think you've got to take that into consideration, more his history rather than the way he talks to the umpires. We've got to remember, though, with the Brownlow medal, it isn't an exact science. So you've always got to be trying to find value. And that's why I think Christian Petrarca represents the value, even though the four main guys in the market, Wines, Oliver, Bontempelli and Steele, clearly all four can win it. but I don't think they represent the value Petrarca does. Just on team votes for value, Seedsman $13, Taylor Adams $2.75, Brayshaw, Andrew Brayshaw from Freo $5, Brad Crouch $3 at St Kilda, and Nick Natanui $10 at West Coast. I reckon you're looking at those for value options in your team votes.
What about Miller from the Gold Coast for top 5 or 10, Whitey?
I just don't think Gold Coast have won enough games. He's an accumulator, so he gets a lot of sort of 1-2s, 1-2-3s. I don't think he has the same sort of impact on games. That's always my concern with McRae. I think McRae's had his best ever year, but I don't think he quite has the impact on games, Miller, to get enough votes.
Why the big discussion on the midfielders award, which the Brownlow has become? We will never see a fullback or full forward win it again. Complete joke as far as what the original concept of the award was. That's from Macca. It's been like that for 20 years, yeah. Macca. Yeah. Darcy Minimum. Parish to Paul, more votes than North Melbourne. 51, love that value. That's from Matt from the Valley. Ian from Ballarat. Yeah, Ian from Ballarat. What does Mick think about... we've already touched on that. There's a few people not happy about this Essendon District Football League decision, Mickey. Hey, Mick, how good was Josh Shackey? He stepped up and played a role this final series. You were critical of him when we got him. He's grabbed this opportunity and delivered. That's from Swanee there, Mick.
Yeah, Swanee, you're spot on. He was terrific last week, and you know, really happy for Josh to play at that level and to play a role for the team that was so important, trying to negate the Alea influence in the air. And he done it magnificently, and he was a beneficiary by hitting the scoreboard himself. And he probably could have kicked a couple of more, to be perfectly frank. So real positive stuff for Josh. Hope he can do it again in a grand final. You think he's played his way into the team on the back of that performance. Let's hope he has a great game, because he's had some heartburn. Brisbane probably didn't want him in the end due to his competitiveness and work rate. The Bulldogs have probably been a little bit indifferent in terms of their trust with him before probably the last 5 or 6 weeks of his footy, but last week he proved me wrong, and good on him for doing that, because he had a terrific game.
Running out of time as always, boys. It's been a lot of fun. We'll put up your Brownlow bets on our social media platforms. Bring on Sunday night. Enjoy the racing on Saturday, lads, but next Saturday it's go time. Grand final day between the Melbourne Football Club and the Western Bulldogs. Plenty to discuss until then. Thanks, Mickey. Enjoy your day, and I'll be watching that speech once again before I go for my run today.
Just before I go, Gareth, most club votes at Clubland.
Yep.
I want to go Luke Parker $1.50, Jai Simkin at $2.10, Jaeger O'Meara at $1.65, into Parrish for $60 and $40. The same top three with Zach Merritt. First bet gets you over a monkey, and the second bet's about 450. So I think you can sit back, outlay your 100, and probably pick up some cool cash on the back of those results.
I love it, Mickey. Whitey, what was your staking plan again? It was a little bit complicated, wasn't it?
It always is. I'm going to go $50 on Petrarca at $14, and yep. I'm going to have $50 on that same first multi that Mickey came up with. I like that one.
All right,
boys. That was good for me.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for that,
lads. We need more than $100 for the Brownlow. We need more than $100 for the Brownlow.
I'd love to be a fly on that wall when Mickey meets his football club to discuss what they're going to do with those premierships. All right, Mickey, thanks for that.
See you, boys.
There we go. Mick Pagwan, Adam White. Happy birthday, Whitey.
Thanks, Gareth.